anxious, can't sleep, oh my! Though modern times are making us all thoroughly distraught and causing us to lose lots of sleep, a prescription for happy pills will help us all find peace. But this leads us to ask, what price must we pay for popping all those pills for peace?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 759th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Cape Tribulation who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer, our own Miss Idaho, Nikki James on the board.
Good morning.
Folks, given the miserable economy and all those suicide bombers hiding in the bushes, the times in which we live have become downright maddening for many. No, not many, for many millions. Thus, we have become a nation of people popping pills to find peace. This pill popping became really big business about 15 years ago when the federal government allowed pharmaceutical companies to market directly to you and I. In short order, consumers became aware that their mental afflictions could be ameliorated by taking a happy pill or two or three, and were soon banging down the doors of their doctor's offices demanding more. Soon drugs like Seroquel, an antipsychotic replacement for the infamous Thorazine, were being prescribed as be-all, end-all treatments for depression, anxiety, insomnia, and bipolar, thus earning their parent companies like AstraZeneca billions of dollars per year for each individual kind of pill. Pill popping would seem to be a blessing for all concerned. The afflicted find peace, companies earn fortunes, employees get paychecks, and the government gets a piece of everybody's action. But wait. Things can't simply, these can't be that easy. Something's got to be amiss here. And so we ask, what price must we pay for popping all those pills for peace? Here to help us find a way, we have from Chicago, Martha Rosenberg, author and health journalist. Martha, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, thank you, Michael. I'm happy to be with you.
And then, let's see, you're a health journalist. You write in various blogs, I guess. Where do we find your material? I found it, I don't know where it came to me, but there it was one day. Preventive Psychiatry e-newsletter, A Nation of Pill Poppers, 19 Dangerous Drugs Pushed by Big Pharma. I thought, that's interesting stuff. Who is this person?
Well, I write for Alternet, which is a progressive website, and, of course, the Huffington Post, and because so many people are on there, and Consumer's Digest, which is the magazine. And I cover big food and big pharma.
Good. Well, hopefully we can pick you up for some big food conversation when you come out with your new book, which is entitled Born with a Junk Food Deficiency, How Flax, Quacks, and Hacks Pimp the Public Health. That sounds like interesting stuff. Martha, we have indeed become a nation of pill poppers, antidepressants here in the United States. 10% of us, 27 million of us, are now popping pills to find peace of mind. And the number of antipsychotic drugs given to children up 100% over the last few years. So not only are we becoming a nation of pill poppers, but the rate at which we're becoming a nation of pill poppers is escalating more and more and more and more. So it would seem like we're headed down the road of big pharma here. What the heck happened? How did all of this come about in a very brief sort of way?
Well, really, the best answer is the direct-to-consumer advertising itself. Because obviously advertising works, and if you watch TV, you'll see that maybe the majority of paying ads right now are really from Big Pharma.
No. That's only half right. Half of the ads are Big Pharma, from Big Pharma advertising various drugs. The other half of the ads are for big lawyers trying to get you to sign up so they can sue the big drug companies.
That's probably true, right? Right. So there's money in it on both directions, but I do believe that advertising is the reason that it works. And I used to work in the ad agencies myself, and it's amazing how talented some of the art directors and creative people are, and they're focused on selling a consumer product, and it works. So that's the reason why that people began, the direct-to-consumer advertising began in the late 90s with Claritins, which was the allergy pill. And overnight, millions of people developed seasonal allergies, which they had maybe never had, because it's the power of suggestion, and there's a certain pleasure in self-diagnosing and self-treating. And, so it began with the Claritins and the GERD medicines, the anti-reflux,
the gagging medications.
Right, exactly. I forget all their names, but it began with those. And, of course, then you had your Prozac and that whole, the happy pills.
Well, I'd like to focus, if we might, today on the happy pills, because I don't know why. The presentation kind of really struck me that, we are going through hard times. The economy is bad. There are suicide bombers hiding in the bushes. Everybody's out to get us. It's hard to find a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The way to take care of the whole stress-filled world is pop a pill, and all the troubles go away. And we've been popping a lot of those pills. And so I'd like to talk about, the basic kinds of drugs that we're now taking for our mental afflictions. And I guess it would be predicated on the degree to which our minds are afflicted that the drugs would be classified. Is that a fair assertion?
Well, yes and no. What Big Pharma typically does is it will get an approval for a drug. Like we've talked about the antipsychotics, the Seroquel and Zyprexa, and then what we call indication creep. Then they'll get subsequent approvals. So maybe it starts out for schizophrenia and bipolar, but pretty soon it's for daily.
Pretty soon you need them to change your tires.
Exactly. So it kind of rolls downhill, and like Seroquel is a good example because it did begin as a treatment for schizophrenia, and now it's a very, very popular sleep medication, and it's also very widely used among the troops in, Iraq, of course, they're coming home, but Afghanistan, and of course, you have to ask yourself, do you really want a sleeping pill in the battlefield? But they're they became a popular sleeping pill, so the pills become, necessary, like you say, to change the tire. They become more and more uses for them.
Mm-hmm. And what are the different kinds of, you have classifications of them. The first one would be the antipsychotics. Then there would be the ADHD, the attention deficit disorder drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the SSRIs, which I have no idea what the heck they are. So let's go through these and kind of describe what they are. Let's start with the antipsychotics. And of course, the only thing I know about them would be from, Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
That's as close as I know about it. But
no, that's a good frame of reference. It really is because, people who weren't even crazy were in there. Well, the antipsychotics are mostly Seroquel, Zyprexa, Geodon, and Risperdal. And they were billed originally as better than Thorazine and Haldol and Stilazine and Melarilin, the original antipsychotics that we kind of associate with people in institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And they were said to be better because they didn't produce some really icky side effects that you don't want. But what ended up happening with these new drugs is that they do produce the same side effects, but Big Pharma and the government test drugs for such a short period of time that these side effects only emerged after they were legalized and people were taking them. So they're not really better, though they're much, much more expensive, which is why they're marketed so much.
Who pays for all these drugs, by the way?
Well, that's a great question. And that's what I always try to point out to people is that these are hugely expensive meds that maybe are $200, $300, $400 a month, and you might be taking more than one. And they have expensive ads, obviously on TV. And who pays for that? Two people. Anybody who holds a health policy and anybody who pays taxes. Because if it's the entitlement programs of Medicare, Medicaid, we pay. And if you're, if you have a private insurance, you pay. And so either way, it's not at all free. You know, it rolls right down, you know.
It rolls right downhill to the big pharma companies that make all the money from them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, folks, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio program this morning. Today we're talking with Martha Rosenberg, a health journalist out of Chicago, Illinois, and we're talking about the impact of the drugs we take for our mental afflictions, and we're taking a lot of them these days. 27 million of us, almost a tenth of the population in the United States is taking these drugs. So what's the true cost we're paying for them? That's the subject. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, how does this sound for lunch? Seroquel, Zyprexa, Geodon, Ritalin, Concerta, Strattera, Adderall, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft. Martha Rosenberg, who dreams up these names? And by golly, they should hire me. I could do better than that.
Well, you know, that's a good question. The names are really very brilliant. And I don't know. I think ad agencies... I don't think the drug companies themselves do it because they're more scientific.
Right,
I think
right.
they hire, but they are very brilliant. And you know what, Michael? There is a whole arm in the FDA devoted to nothing more than making sure the names aren't too similar. Because you know, if there was a drug called Prozac versus Prozac, you could kill someone because they get the wrong drug. So there's a lot that goes into regulating those names, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can kill people with these drugs. And let's go back to the atypical antipsychotics, Seroquel, Zyprexa, Geodon. They are dangerous, aren't they?
Well, they are dangerous. And, you know, I was in March, I was in West Virginia meeting with some families of troops who had deceased on the Seroquel, and they were taking exactly what the VA or if they were on active duty, the DOD had prescribed them, and they died. And this wasn't suicide, this wasn't overdose, this wasn't methadone or, you know, something they were doing on the side. It was the drug itself. And so now the Seroquel is, includes a warning for cardiac risk or sudden cardiac death while people are sleeping. So yeah, they're very lethal, and that's before you even combine them with other drugs.
So now these were very healthy military guys, right, in the
mm-hmm.
battlefield. So
mm-hmm.
and yet it's not just them we're prescribing these for. We're also giving them to the very young and the very old.
Good point. Yes, exactly, and it's outrageous because. The young kids, you know, maybe their behavior problems and their teachers or their parents or their doctors say, well, just dose them with this stuff, and this stuff will make them more, you know, relaxed.
The antipsychotics?
Yes,
I mean,
they are.
These are like the, you know, 12-gauge shotguns with double-aught buck on them. I mean, that's...
Oh, it's outrageous. And the saddest thing is that these poor kids... In addition to having a lot of their brain put to, you know, put to sleep in a sense, they gain huge, huge amounts of weight on these drugs because the drugs are known in the pharmaceutical and medical circles as pre-diabetic drugs. They give you glycemic derangement. And so to put a kid on that is almost like to ruin that kid's life. And it's done all the time, you know, along with, as we've talked about, the ADHD drugs, which is another thing they're doing to the kids. But
let's put the antipsychotics aside for a moment and
okay. And
go to the ADHD drugs. How do they differ, I guess, in chemistry between the antipsychotics? Or, I guess they're targeted to a different area of the brain or something?
Well, you know, I guess, I don't know how old you are, but we used to talk about uppers and downers. It's kind of like the difference between uppers and downers. Your ADHD drugs are pretty much speed or amphetamines, except for maybe one that isn't. But they're really stimulants. And there's a paradoxical thing with kids who they say have ADHD or behavioral problems, that if you give them a stimulant, for some reason it relaxes them instead of makes them more hyper. And so, when the kids are too wild, then, the teachers, the doctors, the parents say, well, the kid has got attention deficit disorder or conduct disorder. He won't sit still. You know, we better put him on. It used to be Ritalin, but now there's all the new ones.
I think when I was in grade school, I was a psychotic with ADHD. And I'm just grateful to the good Lord that this stuff wasn't around when I was in grade school, because
I
would have been pickled with it, I'm sure. So
you would, especially boys are giving it more than girls, you know, and when they're just being, you know, wild little kids. Yeah.
And they're being kids.
Right. Well, I mean, I suppose some kids may need it. I'm not going to say for sure because I don't even have kids, but I think a huge amount of them don't need it. They just need maybe, we talk about food, maybe better food. Maybe they've got allergic reactions to what they're eating, and they need outlets. And, you know, there's non-pharmaceutical ways of dealing with it.
And so here's the perfect solution for parents and teachers who have very hyperactive young children, especially boys, who mm-hmm. should be outside playing Cowboys and Indians, but are
right.
instead locked up in a room with, so take this kid and shut up. That's kind of what ADHD drugs.
That's what I think it is. I mean, I know some parents.
Now, hopefully there will be somebody calling in that will counterbalance us.
Right. Well, disagree with that. But, there's another aspect of this ADHD thing, which is that now that there's 5 million kids on it, they've kind of run out of their market. And so Big Pharma is doing two things to churn that market. And one of them is when these kids who grew up on Ritalin or Adderall get to college, they tend to stop the drug. And so Pharma's got a huge campaign to make sure that these kids don't. You know, just because you're in college doesn't mean you're not still ADHD. And they have all this marketing for that. And the other thing is they're marketing to the kids' parents. And they now literally say in their ads, do you or your kids have ADHD? Because it's not too hard to sell speed. You know, back when meth was such a big drug, dealers would say first taste free. And that's why. It's not hard to sell,
Right. You know, what you said about kids going to college really struck me, because I talked with a university professional who told that exact same story, talked about how all of these kids were coming into the university out of homes where they had been drugged for years.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in their lives, they're off the meds
mm-hmm.
and totally out of control because they're no longer on their...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they've been on it their whole life.
Yeah.
There's a school of thought that says that the reason we had so much problems with the troops, you know, the suicides and all the, you know, psychological problems with the troops is because this generation of soldiers is the first one that grew up on these men.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know, so they're going into the military. They're already, you know, hooked on this stuff. And there's many, many reasons to not give kids these drugs. you know, of course they don't grow up, their whole brain doesn't get exercised, and, you know, but one really awful reason is that they've linked these drugs to, like, sudden death, actual cardiac death in kids, and you have to wonder, why would doctors permit a drug like that to be given to kids, you know?
Yes. Let's move on to one more thing here. Let's go to the SSRIs, which are what is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Right.
What the heck is that?
Well, your SSRIs were the first antidepressants of the Prozac category, so they were a new, just sort of like the antipsychotics were a new improved Thorazine. Your SSRIs are new and improved Trivol or some of the older antidepressants. It's like a new and better antidepressant. And the reason it was considered better is, again, it had less side effects than the old ones. And so Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil were the first big three. Paxil is still in big use in the military. And but then, of course, these three went generic. And then Big Pharma began with what they called SNRI instead of SSRI, selective norepinephrine inhibitors, and that would be your Cymbalta and Effexor and some of the...
And those are just kind of general population, chill out, relax kind of drugs?
Well,
hold that. We're going to take a quick break.
Oh, okay.
When we come back, and we'll pick up the SSRIs and SSNIs and all of those I's that you and I take.
The alphabet soup. Okay.
The alphabet soup of drugs that we take to find peace. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. You can join us, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, there are the atypical antipsychotics, Seroquel, Zyprexa, Geodon. There is the ADHD drugs, Ritalin, Concerta, Strattera, and Adderall. There's the, what is it, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft. No matter what's driving us mad, there's a pill to make us happy. And that's what we're talking about today, the happy pills we take to find peace. And you're invited to join us today. We're talking with Martha Rosenberg from Chicago, Illinois, and you. The phone number is 831-479-1080. Really quickly, before we go to the phones and pick up Terry, let's finish up on the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the SSRIs, the Prozacs. They're very popular, aren't they? I hear a lot of people talking about them.
Well, they are very much so, but they've kind of peaked as a next best thing or next new thing. They have kind of peaked in it, so there's new angles on them. And one angle is that they now suggest adding a second drug to them if they stopped working, and they're trying to come up more with SSRIs or antidepressants that don't have sexual side effects because some of them do. So, what I hear
Wait a minute. Am I hearing Viagra?
Well,
Zoloft
probably,
and Viagra,
yeah.
And everything will be fine?
Yeah, probably. Do you remember some of these big, violent shootings like the Columbine and the Tech, Virginia Tech?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the Red Lake was the Indian Reservation, and there was one here in Illinois at Northern Illinois University. Well, all of those shooters were either on these SSRIs or had recently come off of them, because in both cases, they wigged out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the pills, these pills, the argument against them, and we haven't really gotten into what price we pay, but one argument against the so-called happy pills is that they can make somebody really mentally unstable and full of rage, full of homicidal and suicidal thoughts. And there's a website that I always recommend to people who are interested in this, and it's called SSRIstories.com. All it is a listing of every news story in which somebody killed themselves or others on these drugs. And there's 5,000 news stories. So
SSRI.com?
SSRI stories.
Stories.com.
And it doesn't have any editorial.
It's kind of like grim fairy tales. of the modern times, right?
Really?
Let's go to the phones, folks. You can join us today, 831-479-1080. Let's talk with Terry. Terry, welcome to the food chain.
Hey. I just wanted to, maybe you don't know or you do know about the general milieu of life in the college world right now, but my daughter, she's just starting off in her sophomore year at the University of Oregon up in Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been on and off of Adderall for about a year. Came out of high school in Sedona, Arizona, one of the top 10 students in her class. Straight A's, just in all the what do they call those classes where they're prepared for
the honors?
Advanced placement. That's Adderall is an ADHD drug, right?
Yeah. Well, but she was not taking any of that when she was in high school. She was a jock, basketball, has several records in the state of Arizona for her track performances, et cetera, et cetera. And she gets into college, and I warned her. I said, hey, college is a lot different than high school. So anyway, she gets there, and she's sort of depressed and just did not fit in real well right off the bat. So my wife, who moved with her to Eugene, we have another house up there, and said, well, okay, go to a counselor. So this counselor immediately said, oh, you need to take some Adderall.
Happy pill.
Yeah, happy pills, exactly. And it turns out that, like, probably a quarter of the student, about one out of every four kids that she knows are on Adderall, and they're selling it too. They sell it on the street.
Right.
They sell it to each other because it's speed basically,
uh-huh.
And it is definitely a performance enhancer as far as academics go. These kids, at college is like you sleep about 2 hours a day, for the week up to your finals and your quarters and all that stuff.
Yeah, these are things that used to be sold kind of on the black market, I'm thinking of the old truck driver pills and things like that.
Yeah, this is totally legal now.
But now it's totally legalized and government sanctioned and everybody's happy and everybody's making a fortune and getting paychecks. So how's your daughter coping with that?
She goes on and off of it, and she does not like it. She says if she has to really bore down into her studies, and then she takes it, and otherwise she doesn't because she admits right off the bat, I don't sleep well.
And that's the quickest way to go. Go ahead, Martha.
Probably doesn't have much of an appetite either because, the amphetamine,
Yeah, but she's a girl. So not having much of an appetite, that's a big plus factor for them.
So then the quickest way to go crazy, as I understand it, is not sleep. And then eat bad food.
Yeah, which she does.
Okay.
It's so accepted among all of her peers. It's crazy. You're no longer a drug addict. You're just a normal person.
Well, that's a great question, Terry. How did they sell us on becoming a nation of pill poppers?
It starts with your practitioner, and they're given little, they give free samples.
Yeah.
I like this doctor. He gives me these free pills, because the doctor passes off the free samples to his patients, and they like whatever it is, so they keep coming back to that same doctor. I work for the University of California, so I have a health plan that I still pay like $450 a month for, but nevertheless, I have a health plan. I think that's a lot cheaper than most people have, but nevertheless, it's a health plan. So I'm almost relegated to going to the same doctor every time that I need to go to a doctor, and then my wife and my daughter, under the same health plan, wind up doing the same thing. But whatever that doctor, whatever ties he has with the drug vendors,
Right, right.
I think we used to call them pushers anyway.
Well, you know, that seems to be something very interesting going on here as well, because it seems as though from the statistics I've read, run across in looking into this subject, that a lot of people are no longer going to the psychiatrist or the psychologist. They're going to the drugstore instead. And I guess when we come back from the break, I'd like to pick that up. Terry, thank you so much mm-hmm. for the call. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'd like to talk about the relationship we had with people and how we're losing that relationship with professionals like psychologists, psychotherapists. And,
good idea, and yes.
Instead of talking, we're going straight to the drugstore and saying, more happy pills, please.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We're at 831-479-1080 today. You can pick up your phone and call us up and talk with Martha Rosenberg about the psychoactive drugs that we're all, as a whole nation, becoming very happy with. 27 million of us now are taking pills to find peace from our mental afflictions. Whoa, right back. Well, there are pills to pick us up and pills to take us around and pills to take us all over the place. But I wonder if there's any pills to make us settle down and think straight. What do you think, Martha? Is there anything that actually helps us just settle down and think logically about things?
Well, I'm sure you'll agree with this, Michael. Good nutrition.
There you go.
I mean, there's no drug in the world like good food. I really believe that. And I think a lot of people who have problems with anxiety or depression, they could eat better. I really believe that.
Well, and that's a great point, because if you think how lousy some people eat, many people eat, and how the foods they eat are, you know, deficient in essential nutrients and loaded up on things that really don't help at all, then you can see how you know, people could get off kilter relatively easy.
And so, another really important thing that people neglect, especially when they're taking ADHD drugs, is sleep, because sleep is regenerative. And they say that many of us are running around with, you know, 6 and even 5 hours of sleep, and then they want to know why everybody's having road rage and shooting everyone. And
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So sleep deprivation and nutrient and mineral deprivation are big reasons for the national mental illness, I think.
10% of us are now on psychiatric drugs. 10% of one out of 10 people.
Outrageous.
And the rate at which we are picking up these drugs is increasing rapidly. 100% increase in the number of people using or psychiatric drugs in the past decade. It's just going through the roof. I'd like to talk how we're using these drugs, because that's what really kind of frightens the heck out of me, because we're not just taking them, you know, and we're not just real people going to the doctor and saying, hey, I need help staying awake tonight or something. We're giving them to children in school. I ran across this incredible statistic out of Florida. Children from as young as 3, 15% of the foster children in Florida are being fed psychiatric drugs.
Yeah, I believe that. It's outrageous. And foster, because nobody, their parents they're like guinea pigs.
And there's nobody there to watch over them except foster parents, who are probably going crazy by young children who are acting out all kinds of different things. And so here, take this, and that's the end of that. Also, seniors in care facilities are being fed the antipsychotics. To what purpose?
Well, you know, those are two very important revenue streams for Big Pharma, and people need to realize that this is very, very much a financial story. Because the kids, foster kids and young kids, and poor and you know, with mental disabilities or so-called mental disabilities, because they're going to be on public, Medicaid, what pharma does is it loots our tax dollars through calling these kids, mentally ill and putting them on these drugs. So it's hugely profitable to pharma to do that. And there, it's no coincidence that the kids and the old people are being focused on, because they don't have a say necessarily in what they're taking. They're given a drug and just take this and shut up. And in both cases, they're possibly out of control, you know. So in the nursing homes, it's been a huge scandal that the drugs like Seroquel and, you know, the antipsychotics we spoke about are very highly correlated with death in the elderly people in the nursing homes. And it's almost like no one cares because, you know, I've heard FDA officials say, you know, why is this? There's thousands of elderly people actually dying from being given these drugs inappropriately. The drugs are labeled "do not give to seniors with dementia," and yet it's almost like a legal euthanasia or something, and it's very widespread.
Wow. There you go. And what about in public schools? And for children like I was in, in public school, you know, in grade school, a young Montana boy, full of piss and vinegar, couldn't sit down for more than six seconds in a row.
Because you're a little boy. Well, that's my weakest link, because I don't have kids. I'm not at all connected with public schools, okay? But, again, I would have to say, when you're talking about kids, they don't make their own drug decisions. Their parents, their teachers, and their doctors do. So it really, you could look at it like abuse. You really could.
And they probably all work in concert, you know, to mellow the behavior out. And there you go. So,
you know, I thought our caller had such an interesting point that these kids not only are being given the speed inappropriately, but they're selling it. So what it is, it's a legal street drug that pharma is making money on. And if pharma weren't...
And government, right?
Yeah. And if they weren't, they'd be arrested and it would be called crack or something. But as long as it's in the mainstream, I just think that's, you know, you talked about what we don't go to people anymore for help. We go to drugs.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing that I find very interesting, you know, these anonymous programs like Alcoholic Anonymous and, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and those 12-step programs, you know, obviously our talk, therapy, you know, the group therapy from each other. And all, you know, millions of people are cured, okay, of addiction, depression, anxiety, and with no drugs. So obviously that works.
But nobody's making huge money on it. And so we're going to take a quick break, but I have two questions left for you, Martha Rosenberg. Question number one is, how did the federal government and Big Pharma get so hooked up together? You know, I know that the food safety czar for the United States of America is Michael Taylor, former vice president of Monsanto Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I see the Big Pharma and Big Government working together, it just rings true. Do stay tuned right back. Well, folks, all that anxiety, depression, and sleepless nights, no problem. We'll pop a pill and everything will be just fine. And all made possible now, it's all legal, at the behest of the federal government and the pharmaceutical companies that make these pills. How did they get in bed together to form such an effective team that now 10% of the United States is taking these pills on a regular basis, Martha Rosenberg?
Well, you know, the connection between the government, the FDA and industry is not really too different from USDA and industry.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's creepy. And you know, a big part of it, there's two things that I see. I don't really see the government profiteering in money. I think it's psychological, but there's two factors that I see. One is there's a really weird collegial thing that goes on. When you go to meetings with the FDA doctors versus the pharma doctors, it's like a suck-up thing where the FDA wants to be part of the cool crowd and the frat boys. You know, it's like a real psychological thing.
And they circulate back and forth from industry to government, government to industry. So
right. I was going to say the other thing, which is probably even more obvious, is the lobbying and the revolving door. And, you know, you mentioned Michael Taylor. He actually, in addition to his Monsanto, actually lobbied against the Delaney Amendment, which says that food can't give lab animals cancer and still be given to people. I mean, so he's just a pure industry person. Now, why did Obama name him? Well, there's this back and forth between industry and government that is really the root of all of this problem. And there's so many examples, even outside of food, one example being this whole thing with Gardasil and Rick Perry. That was because his chief of staff had gone on to work for Merck. So when you leave government, what do? You go to industry because they pay four times as much, and you come back and you squeeze the government people you worked with, the money. And that is, I believe, the root of the whole thing.
So then what then is the true cost, the true price we're paying for becoming a nation of people popping pills for peace?
The true price,
What is this costing you? I mean, it's a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But,
well, you know, there's
I'm thinking
so
about
many,
all those young boys who are being drugged up right now.
The kids and the soldiers and the suicide. Well, there's so many ways you can look at it. There's a financial cost that is our tax dollars and our health care dollars, which is very clear to see.
That's billions and trillions, I'm sure, by now. One drug, $5 billion to AstraZeneca. I mean, goodness sake.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's, I think there's a spiritual thing that has to do with people accepting nostrums, you know, like false solutions. In other words, if you have a bad marriage or a bad job or problems, real problems with money or something like that, you don't want a happy, you shouldn't take a happy pill, you should deal with life, you know. So all these people who could be dealing with their real problems, you know, are instead, we're losing their brain power because they're just going into the ozone on these drugs. So there's that. There's also, I think, a big factor of the fact that these drugs are actually in the wastewater and people drink them. You know, they've done several studies where they'll find, like, levels of Prozac or hormones in the, you know, so in other words, even if you and I don't take them.
We're taking them.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Martha, we're out of time, but we're certainly not out of ammunition. Folks, this has been The Food Chain, Michael Olson, with Martha Rosenberg, a health journalist. Watch for her new book coming out. It's going to be pretty exciting. I think we better pick you up when that comes out and have some more fun. Do stay tuned
for more
What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.